Blog Talk Radio.
That's Jermaine Lamar Cole, and this is the Eric Terrell Show. How y'all feeling? Okay, I hope I didn't scare anybody away with the N-word there. I usually cut it off right before J. Cole starts the song with the N-word, but this is Hip Hop Day, I suppose, on the Eric Terrell Show. So we threw that N-word in there, and we threw in a little bit of lyrics because that's my boy, Jermaine Lamar Cole. And today, does hip-hop help or hurt the African-American community? We've got Dr. Aaron Smith. Fearless is going to join us. Dr. Aaron Smith is going to join us. He's my special guest. And this is going to be a very peculiar, I don't know, peculiar makes it sound a little weird. This is going to be a unique episode of the Eric Terrell Show because, for one, we don't have five things. If five things is what you want, I'll have five things for you next week, okay? I will have a very hilarious five things for you next week, and because Asia's not here. So this is definitely unique, and we have another one of my co-hosts that is filling in, Miss Elena Brownlee. Elena is here. What's going on, Elena? She is CNN news
How
editor.
You doing?
What's going on?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm all good. Elena's been my big sister since our collegiate years, and she's doing big things down there in Buckhead in the ATL working for CNN. She doesn't work in Buckhead. She works close to Buckhead. But anytime you work close to Buckhead, you know,
you should say it.
Yeah, it gives you something. It gives you a little bit of street cred. I mean, it qualifies you to talk about hip hop, you know. tonight, if you're listening to the show today on Wednesday, you can listen anytime, any day. If you're listening today, though, on Wednesday, the day it's being recorded, I'm at Helium Comedy Club. And if you live in Philadelphia, by the way, I'm at Helium Comedy Club tonight at 8 o'clock, which is why we are recording this show 30 minutes early. Okay, we do 6:30 usually. So if you're listening at the regularly scheduled time, you cannot call in, okay, because we're not really here. We're not really on the air. We're not live. We did this 30 minutes early. Yeah, this is you're hearing an imaginary Eric Terrell and Elena Brownlee. So we've got a lot of good content to get to. So here we go. Does hip hop now? If I ask myself the question, or if someone asks me the question, does hip hop help or hurt the African American community? You may call me a coward. You may say that I didn't answer the question or I took the easy way out. But my honest answer would be neither. Neither or both. Okay? if you made me pick one, if someone put a gun in my head and said, does it help or hurt the African-American community, I would have to go with it hurts. I would have to go with it hurts. Although I love, like you heard to start the show, I love my Jermaine Lamar Cole, and I love hip-hop. I am a fan of hip-hop, okay? I'm a fan of my hip-hop, okay? I have the kind of hip-hop that I like and the artists that I like, and I'm a fan of that. Now, if we want to ask how bad it hurts African-American communities, then we need to look at the two biggest places where hip-hop hits us the hardest. And the first is the impact and the influence that it has on our youth. All right. And people can say that this is also a result of bad parenting and bad restricting of hip-hop and of different influences that come into your home or around your child, but I don't think so. I don't think it matters. I don't think it matters how much you expose your kid to it. Your kid's going to be exposed to not only the music, but the culture that the music influences. And they're going to be able to choose at an early age if this is something I like, if this is a culture, if this is a swag, whatever's fad in the hip-hop culture at the point in time when they're growing up, they'll determine whether I like that. They'll determine how much they like it, how much they want to be like the people who do it the best, or how much they just want to get good grades instead and just not paying attention to it. So it's tough. Okay, it's tough when it comes to our youth, and I think that it's a very dangerous thing that we deal with when we deal with our youth in hip hop. We did a show last year with Mark Brown and titled "When Should You Allow Your Children to Listen to Hip Hop and How Should You Allow Them to Listen to Hip Hop?" And what I concluded from that episode, and what I conclude, period, is that it doesn't matter. Like I said, they'll be exposed, and I say it's dangerous because. Okay, I'll tell you this. I was working at Kyle Wynn Elementary School. You know, I go from school to school. I spend time at different schools months at a time, doing what I do, working with students with special needs. And my particular client goes to the special education classroom. So I follow him around all day long. And there's another kid that's always in his classroom, and this kid knows for a fact that he's the coolest kid in that school. Okay, you can't tell this kid that he is not, all right, the coolest, swaggiest, most influencing, most impactful kid at that school. Nobody's convincing him that. And I don't know if anyone's trying to convince him that, but in his mind, he's got to defend that, okay? And all the kids had to say what they wanted to be when they grew up. They had to write it down on a piece of paper. And this kid said he wanted to be a rapper. He said he wanted to be a hip-hop artist. And I'm looking at his paper as we're passing him down, and I'm thinking, you know what? This is really good. And this is also bad. This is good because part of the reason that people end up falling into mediocrity or underachievement as an adult is because they didn't know at 12 or 11 years old what they wanted to do with their life. And I say, you know what? You know, maybe his head is on straight. I mean, his head is clearly on crooked half the time, at least when he's in class. But maybe there's a method to his madness. I mean, you can't expect Lil Jon or Lil Wayne or any rappers, 2 Chainz or Fetty Wap to have been well behaved in class. You know, maybe this is a young mastermind. He knows what he wants to do, and he's hell bent on doing it. But I said, you know, this is also a bad thing because I'm happy that he knows what he wants to do already. But why hip hop? Why of all the things? I mean, you're young. Your whole life's ahead of you. First of all, the chances of becoming a hip-hop artist are very bleak as if you're trying to become mainstream. And I don't know if he'll have the work ethic to do it. I mean, why rap? These kids are influenced. Now, the second reason that the second place I'll say where hip-hop hits us the hardest, the first is the impact in our youth, and then it hits us hard by the way it portrays us, okay? Mm-hmm. Most of the stereotypes that are bestowed upon the heads of African-American people, young African-American people especially, young African-American men especially, are because of hip-hop and because of the hip-hop culture, okay? Hoodies, okay? Sagging pants, okay? Bad English, all of that. And first of all, there's 2 kinds of hip-hop. Obviously, there's the hip-hop I like, you know. There's the good hip-hop. There's the Nas, the Jermaine Lamar Cole, and the hip-hop that has messages to it and things that aren't played at the clubs. And then you got club hip-hop. And that's I think, what we're debating whether or not hurts the African-American community. But I love hip-hop, and some of the biggest lessons that I've learned come from rappers. Lil Wayne said, if you don't have the key to success, pick the lock, okay? That came from the mouth of Lil Wayne, believe it or not. And Wale said, may the optimism of tomorrow be your foundation for the day. And my favorite rapper, the man that I call one of the greatest philosophers of our time, Jermaine Lamar Cole, J. Cole, said, "Am I about dollars or about change?" Okay, those are three quotes that can change someone's life in a positive way. And before I give it to Elena and Dr. Aaron Smith, I just want to say one or bring up one thing that we all have to think about. And that's the N-word. Because you can't agree, you can't disagree that the N-word wouldn't be as prevalent as it is today without hip-hop. Hip-hop is the engine, the N-word, driving through our society, okay? It's the heartbeat of the N-word. If you want to kill the N-word, if you think it's a horrendous term and it should be eradicated from the English language, then you're going to have to find a way to eradicate hip-hop. And that's something that you cannot kill. Elena, your thoughts?
Well, like you said, there's two different types of hip-hop. So, like you said, you got the Nas, you got the Roots, you got rap like that, hip-hop like that. Then you got the Future Hive, which I also enjoy myself, and other rappers. But I think that it has maybe on a certain demographic, it definitely has an impact on, say, maybe a more urban, people who grew up in the more urban areas. You know what I'm saying? So
right.
If rappers are rapping certain ways, then, and they are kind of living that life as well, but these rappers are just talking, you know, blah, blah, blah. But these people are following that. That's their Bible. That's what they're going by. So sometimes I think it can affect our youth. I don't think it's going to affect them in the sense that they'll never become anything, but it does definitely affect them in a certain way. Like you said, I wouldn't say a good way or a bad way, but it definitely has an impact on them. That's my point of view.
Yeah, most definitely. And, you know, we've all at some point or another, and I think, well, obviously you have, Elena, and I think it happens to me frequently now, more than I realize it, but we've all become victim of a great beat. You know, we've all kind of lost it, and kind of the beat, the music itself, you know, not mm-hmm. the lyrics, but the music, the instruments, and the beat, at some point or another was so good that you really didn't care what they were saying. Like,
yeah, you dismissed those lines entirely.
Yeah, you know, it doesn't matter what you say right now. I'm gonna jig to this song. Okay, this is a.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna dig. I'm gonna dougie something. You know what I'm gonna do, Elena. You know
yeah.
what I do.
Yeah. Yeah. Eight pound stomp to it or something.
Right, bucket.
Bankhead.
Right.
You're so silly.
Yeah, and I think that's what club music. That's partly what club music intends to do to you. Because what are you supposed to do at a club? You're supposed to dance.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, if you're saying, you know, come and slob on my knob, like come and catch this skeet skeet, or come and bend it over backwards and sew it up and let me catch it, or I don't know what I kind of still know what they say, but I kind of don't. I'm a little removed from the club scene. Well, not really. You know, I'm there sometimes. But anyway, Elena, stop it. You're making me say things. But you don't care about that. You don't care what they're saying, okay? Now, listen here. Elena and I are going to talk to someone right now who's been on the Eric Terrell Show before, okay? He's a great friend of Eric Terrell, okay? I came up with his wife especially. His wife used to babysit me. They hate when I say that, but I always say that because that's how long the history goes between us, all right? And he just got his doctorate in African-American studies, and he used to be a radio personality for 100.3 The Beat. Fearless. What's going on, Fearless? Hey, what's happening?
Are you recording this?
You know what? You know, I think we decided to record it. It's too late. It's too late.
No, I'm glad. I'm glad you're recording this. I'm gonna say some thanks, man. And you gonna have this on tape. How's everybody doing?
We all good. Listen, Fearless was your radio name, and you're also Dr. Aaron Smith. So I don't know if you got kind of a split personality, but they blend to make a great, you know, insightful and unpredictable person. So
I wear a lot of hats. Just call me nigga.
Okay, okay.
For tonight, for the sake of the show, you know, just for the topic.
Okay. Listen here, nigga. you know, Elena's so weak. Listen here, you know a lot more about. You got your doctorate in African American studies, so you know a lot more than us about the African American community, and you also know more about us than hip hop. So
I don't know about that, but I sat in class longer than you. That's what that means. I mean, I stayed in school when I could have been doing other things. But it definitely helps. It helps a lot. And I think it depends on who you ask. If you ask a middle class, upper class black person who doesn't like to be embarrassed around their white friends or white masters, then they might say it's bad. But if you ask the people who lived in most of those communities who had very little chance to make over $20,000 a year, who are now millionaires and things of the like, have traveled the world, they probably would have never left the block. That community, that segment of society, that class, if you will definitely say positive. So it depends on who you ask, you know? Definitely depends on who you ask.
Now, do you
tells
think...
about the person.
Yeah, that's true. That's
your
true.
Answer.
Now,
tells you who you're talking
to. I feel like we get stronger and stronger influenced as a society with every year that passes. Because hip hop has been around for almost 45 years now. It started like in the early 1970s with you know, in the South Bronx when they were battle rapping and stuff. And so if you think about a 45-year-old art, okay, almost half of a century, the people who were my age, who were the hip, swaggy, cool kids when hip hop came out in their lower 20s, these people are 65, pushing 70 years old. So back in those days, people's parents were like, okay, what is this? What are you guys doing? What is this new thing that people are doing outside and spitting at each other? They didn't like it. But these days, people's parents love hip-hop. So do you think that the influence is bigger now than it's ever been?
Oh, yeah, definitely. The influence is much, much bigger. It's international, you know, reached billions in sales.
Is that good or bad?
Like, oh, no, that's beautiful. It's one of the best things that have happened to black people. Because if people ask me how many people have hip-hop killed, I could probably count them on one hand that I know. And, you know, you can theoretically argue more, but if you ask me how many people were killed by many other things, I can quantifiably, through statistics, tell you thousands, if not hundreds of thousands. So it's kind of hard to argue how detrimental hip hop is to the black community when you're talking to a historian or somebody who deals with facts and statistics.
Yeah,
I go hard.
But it has an impact though.
Definitely has a brilliant, wonderful paradigm shifting impact. One of the memories I have being a child of the 70s is when I used to watch TV, and for hip hop fans, they might remember when Dr. Dre was dissed by Eazy-E, and they put that picture of him up. You know, and they called him an undercover drag fag and all that when he was doing the Midnight Wrecking Crew, and they showed him with the lip gloss and the sequins on. And if you want to Google that picture, you can Google Dr. Dre, lip gloss and sequins, and that picture of him living will come up. This was the dominant image of black men in entertainment after the Teddy Pendergrasses and the Barry Whites and all that they were able to push aside, you know, and got ready for Prince and Michael Jackson. But before that, the brothers were dressing kind of crazy and promoting themselves kind of crazy. And a lot of people never want to address that whole black manhood issue, that hip-hop with people like Run DMC and Public Enemy, when we wasn't wearing no sequins, we wasn't putting no S-curls, no gels, we wasn't trying to be Billy D, and we were trying to look like brothers on the block. So there's a lot of other layered, nuanced issues that people want to address. They just want to do this broad brush stroke.
But Brothers was real sweet before hip hop came. The streets was not on TV like that.
That's true.
Let's be clear. Yeah, so a lot of us were, you know, we would have been doing the Kanye like 15, 20 years early if it hadn't been for hip hop. We would have been young thugging, you know, back in 1985, if it wasn't for Stratos and Kangols.
And there's people, and there's so many people who wouldn't have success without hip hop, like Will Smith.
But not even just people. I'm talking about whole communities. If you watch a movie like Fort Apache, the Bronx, or The Warriors, if you look at the South Bronx in the early in the late 70s and early 80s, it was a wasteland. I'm talking about abandoned buildings for blocks and burnt out cars, people literally burning trash to keep fires warm. This was a reality. These people were left for dead.
Yeah.
After the Kerner Commission report, when they asked what happened after the riots, what caused those riots after 68 when Dr. King was assassinated, the Kerner Commission report was a report issued to seek what caused the riots and what could prevent the riots from happening again, and they came up with a strategy called benign neglect. Benign neglect basically said, we're going to leave them niggas to their own demise. We're not going to fund them. We're not going to pay no attention to them. We're going to pretend they don't exist. We're going to get on TV with shows like Dynasty and Dallas. We're going to make Cleopatra, the black queen, played by Liz Taylor, the white woman with the flat butt. And we're going to go hard and act like niggas ain't never come to America and built it, and they're not right down the street poor as hell, just like they do now in North Philadelphia. That was the plan. Hip-hop changed that plan. There is no one-word answer that can better address why that plan was thwarted from urban renewal and eminent domain, all the pushing around they did to black people, and all the pushing to the side they did and ostracizing us out of society completely. They was not giving brothers shots. That's why you would see those old footage where you could see people like 20, 30 deep hanging on the corner before they started deciding to lock us all up because it was profitable. Brothers used to just grow up and be out. Just hang out, literally, hang out. 10, 20, 30, 40 people on a corner, rolling dice, doing whatever, just being there. Because America had decided they didn't need us anymore, but then hip-hop came, and we was popping so crazy that they had to come down to them park jams, even if it was just a Columbus and Steel that we had created once again. Hip-hop. Y'all welcome.
But,
do you feel like hip-hop has helped out those streets financially? Do you think it's helping them, or you think it's just making them more of a tourist attraction?
Oh, no, it definitely helps those streets if people get out of them, because those people would have never got out.
Yeah.
That school-to-prison pipeline idea, when those people are never developed to be owners. They are developing people to be consumers, to be criminals, and to promote white supremacy and the status quo as far as capitalism and the corporate, you know, greed. That's it.
Yeah.
You either want to play with us and push our agenda, or you're going to get crushed by it, and if you want to do nothing, you're going to do nothing in this cell because we still need to make money off. That's all they plan to do. So if you make a rap song and you make millions of dollars and you get royalty checks, excuse me, and if you create a situation where you're leaving this environment, you're seeing the world, and God forbid showing the world what those people are going through. Because that was critical. That was critical during Vietnam, where America was going overseas telling people what to do and how they should be just and moral. But then, you know, the footage came of what we were doing to other people. Same thing with the civil rights movement. On the William Pettus Bridge, you know, Bloody Sunday in Selma with the movie depicted. When the world saw the shame and the hypocrisy of America, they said, hold on, brother. You don't even treat black people like human beings. You can't come here talking like this. So that public shaming is a history of public shaming that has had international consequences. So when we went around the world saying this is what's going on the streets of Brooklyn, of Los Angeles, of the South Bronx, it makes an amazing difference. The only reason I ever knew how people in St. Louis talked and what they went through was because of people like Nelly and Chingy. The only reason I knew about gang culture was because of people like Ice-T and NWA. So that's the only reason. Unless I had a cousin from that area, back then there was no white corporate institution or media outlet that was letting me know that everybody was going through this thing and it was a global system. Because the last thing they wanted me to know was this was not an accident. It was not arbitrary.
Right.
We were not all in the
right.
ghetto because we just happened to wake up one day and want to be there. We were in the ghetto because they said, do not come in our towns. And if you're here when the sun is down, you know, sundown towns, they called them, we will kill you. They had signs up. They had lynches. They had riots where they burned all of our houses, like Tulsa, Oklahoma, took all of our stuff, and said, you niggas stay here. And I didn't realize all this when hip hop came. But I was just like, yo, I don't know why I'm angry, and I don't know why I don't want to be feminine, and I don't know why it is the way it is, and everywhere I go, white people on top, black people on the bottom. But I know that this is the only outlet, the only creative expressive outlet at the time that dealt with any of that rage and any of those questions. I've never heard an R&B song about the prison industrial complex. I've never heard an R&B or even a jazz song talking about abortion like Retrospective for Life with Common and Lawrence. I've never heard these genres address these issues. So I don't care how much they talk about jewelry, how much they talk about drugs. They talk about everything else that nobody, not even politicians, are courageous enough to speak on to this day. Where else do you see a black man speaking his mind except for the pulpit and the stage?
That's it. That's real. That's true. That's true. And they need to speak their mind. And listen here, we're not coming at you, you know, we're not like, you know, but I'm just saying, because I'm going to ask you something else right now, but the questions that we ask, are not to like debate you or anything, but, we just want you to enlighten people. Okay. Now we got that it helped back then. Okay. But fast forward to right now, those same thing, I mean, it told our story. Back in the 70s, back in the 80s, and it undoubtedly helped have our culture become mainstream and have our story told. But a lot of the things that it, a lot of the pictures that it paints these days, and which is why I'm happy about kind of the resurgence of quote unquote real hip hop with people like J. Cole, Wale, and Kendrick Lamar. But the picture it shows now, I think by the club music, is still just as loud as J. Cole, Wale, and Kendrick Lamar. And the people that are speaking for us and that are making us mainstream, the way that they helped us by doing that back in the day, can be hurting us. And do you see why some people think that it's hurting us? Because of the way it puts us in a box. When you think about drugs, when you think about sagging pants, when you think about smoking and drinking, and sex and degrading women and things like that. And so does it help now just as much as it helped back then?
This is what I tell people all the time. I said it's something called the laws of causation or causality, right? Like cause and effect. One of the things that is present in the law of causality is the cause must precede the effect in time. That means if you're going to say something caused something, it had to happen before the effect occurred. Does that make any sense what I'm saying?
Right. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So if you tell me that all these conditions, you know, Tupac used to say, he said, like, we the first ones to bomb and cuss. Nigga, tell me how you want it. Like this didn't happen after hip-hop came. All of the symptoms, all of the ailments of society, people talk about, even the manipulation of black culture and expression, the commodification of black courage and black consciousness, even from white supremacist superstructure, the larger system took everything and used it against us and exploited us with it. So now hip hop comes along as like the 3,000th thing from Birth of a Nation, you know, the movie when we were being depicted all crazy. Every time we turn around, we try to do something, we try to sing and dance, you know, Jim Crow, minstrel shows, right? Imitating us,
right,
but degrading us, right? You know, making a caricature of us, exploiting us. So if you see that this system has existed for 500 years, and like you said earlier, this genre has only existed 45 years, but we're talking about the same issues and the same problems, how would a logical person say, yeah, the problems we've been facing for the past 500 years are the results or largely mitigated by this 45-year-old genre? That is illogical and impossible. This cannot
right.
be about hip-hop because all of these problems existed hundreds of years before hip-hop. Now, what the issue is a lot of people who critique hip-hop outside of the culture, don't listen to hip-hop, they never want to address the real root issue, which is racism and white supremacy. You got a group of people that were owned 100-plus years longer than they've been free. We've been free for about, what, 155 to 160 years. We were enslaved for over 240. We've been slaves in this country longer than we've been free. And if you don't think that has more to do with all of our problems than the last 45 years of hip-hop music, then you know when you hear that kind of answer, you're talking to somebody that's crazy. This ain't about hip-hop. Now, if you say when hip-hop got into the hands of white supremacy, racism, and capitalism, Oh, yes, just like everything else. Just like when we got into the hands of white supremacy and capitalism, we became property. We became other than what we were. We became subjects to be put on auction blocks and objects. Right?
Right. Now,
but that doesn't mean black people are bad. That doesn't mean black people got worse. That means black people came into contact with a wicked, evil, exploitative system. And as a result, we were twisted outside of our nature. And our resistance to everything that was going on still showed the best in us, even though we didn't have the opportunity to have full agency in humanity and express ourselves the way that we would, you know, as it be our divine right as human beings, we were labeled property. So, yeah,
now they
got their hands in it. I agree with that. But that doesn't make me look at hip-hop any different. That makes me look at the people who got their hands on it. I'm not going for the shell game. I'm like, take your hands off of hip-hop. Just like if my daughter was 15 and some guy came to my door and he was 25 wanted to date her. Oh, hell no. He says, but I'm a nice guy. Hell no. Now, she starts acting up the next day. Hey, my daughter might be a little wild, but chances are it's this 25-year-old guy has some influence. And the way I'm going to find out is I'm going to do a control variable test. I'm going to take this guy out the equation and say, you're not messing with him, but don't watch how my daughter behaves. Now, if she keeps acting up, I might say it was her. But if every time the common denominator is this same system, the common denominator is racism, white supremacy. It's not the drum. We never had a problem with drums. We never had a problem with rhythm. We never had a problem with song. It's part of everything we've ever done. Wedding ceremonies, babies, harvests. Pleasing the deity and the orishas. Everything we've done as African people for hundreds of thousands, if not millions of years, has involved music. We ain't never been tripping with no music, and it's never done anything to destroy us. So if you tell me that for hundreds of thousands of years, African people have an intricate and intimate relationship with music that has always been beneficial and even divine, but all of a sudden, in the last 50 years, with our former slave master in charge, it went left, I'm not looking at the rapper. I'm looking at the slave master and his children.
That's true.
And his wicked system. So hip-hop ain't changed. There's just much
more
time than I was looking for. Who has the spotlight? Who is controlling what is seen? Who is the dictator of the flow of the mainstream? And
right,
we know that.
Listen, we are all out of time. We are all out of time. You said some poignant things, and you definitely laid it right out, because that's what a lot of you mentioned the middle class, upper class, black people, and how and why, and you said they're the ones who think it's hurting the African American community, which is why you said it depends on who you ask, and the reason they say it's hurting the community is because of what you just said, because the system, it's systematic how they'll always try to portray the negative aspects of it, and like you said, pay attention to the slave master, okay? Not us, because they're trying to shed a light on things that on things that will definitely hurt the black community, because they want us to kill ourselves, and they want us to keep sagging our pants, and they want us to not get jobs, and they want us to underachieve. Listen here, thanks for joining us. Okay. So, listen, we've got a three-part series here. Next week we're doing Does BET, we're talking about the network, the whole network and everything they play, and the history of it and what they do for us. BET, Help or Hurt the African-American Community. The week after that, Does the Media Help or Hurt the African-American Community. Thanks for joining us, okay?
It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for joining us. Listen here. You know, all we want you to do is love, okay? That's what hip-hop needs to do, and that's what we need to do to the right kind of hip-hop and to a good beat, okay? Just love, okay? Love yourself. Love the music. Love hip-hop music. Love others. Love the truth and love love. And it's not hard to love love. All you got to do is love God, because God is love, and God did it, okay? Thanks for joining me.
Amen.
See you on next week.